I know it's an ongoing journey for all of us. I know, you know, I'm nowhere near perfect, but I think the first step is the awareness of the blind spots, right? That is number one, is the awareness. Only once you become aware can you actually then, you know, work towards, you know, moving past them.
Hey everybody, Tim Riddle here from the Discover Blind Spots podcast. Hey, this week is episode 4, so I know it's still new, but I'm not sure how many people we're reaching, but I'm amazed each week at the incredible nuggets of value that come out of these interviews. Each week after the interview, and I kind of go back and listen, I think, wow, I mean, I need to write that down. I need to put that on my wall. I need to carry that around with me. I mean, just incredible bits of help and value that I can take with me. And I feel like you can as well. You know, one of our blind spot principles is that we allow others to speak in our lives. Well, you know what? This is one of the ways that you can do that. It's one of the ways this could happen. I guess I say all that to say, hey, could you help me spread the word? I mean, my heart is that I just want these stories to help people grow. That's it. So would you help me spread the word? I mean, here's how you can do it. Just share the link, you know, however you're listening, whether it's on our discoverblindspots.com website. Under the resources tab, if you go there, you'll see all the episodes and you'll actually see some other stuff, some videos and some blog posts and so forth, all free. Nobody's going to hassle you. Just go check it out. Or maybe the thing to do is leave us a review in iTunes. In fact, that's probably the best way to sort of spread the word because, you know, obviously if you move up in the iTunes world, you start to get in front of more people and you start to show up on lists and so forth. You could also share that episode, you know, one of our episodes from iTunes at your social media accounts, which is a great way to help us. You just go to iTunes, go to podcast, search Discover Blind Spots, and you'll see all the episodes, you know, only 4 right now, but you'll see them listed. And remember, as I said, I mean, all that's free. No hidden agenda here. It's just part of my mission to help people uncover blind spots in their lives so they can be all that maybe God has wired them up to be. Well, today I have a fascinating guest. His name is Simon Kessler. And many of you know that I love cycling and I've been riding for years, although I just had, 2 weeks ago, I just had rotator cuff surgery. So I'm off the bike for a few months, had a little mountain bike accident. So you can pray for me. You can pray for my wife, probably Stacy, and my family more because they all know that this is a tool. This is a hobby of mine. This is something I do that's very important for my sanity. So I'm trying to keep it together. But back to Simon. Simon is from South Africa. He raced professionally all over Europe. Won several national titles in his younger days, and now he's a coach for cyclists of all levels. I've been training with him for a couple of years, and here's what I love the most is that he's become a dear friend, but also a mentor as well as a coach. Obviously, I know my limitations at my age, but I love working with Simon to help me try to be a little better tomorrow than I am today. Can't fault me for that, right? So I want you to pay attention as you listen. Here, I want you to listen for 2 things that I just think is incredible wisdom. Here it is. 1, he shares his story about suffering a major leg injury at the prime of his career. And while laying in a bed with staples as he's recovering all over his body, he decided to, listen to this, rewrite the narrative of his story. Now, people close to him told him he would never race again, but he decided that was their narrative, not his. So he literally pulled out a piece of paper, and he decided to jot down and write the narrative that he wanted it to be. That, my friends, is powerful. And it's a powerful blind spot tool that you can utilize in your life today. I mean, you can do that right now. The second thing is that he talks about the limitations of the mind and how we often listen too much to that negative voice in our heads. That ever happened to you? Once again, we need to rewrite those negative stories. Well, here it is. Let's get to it. I'm just telling you, you're in for a treat. Share this with your friends. Here's my interview with Simon Kessler. Well, Simon, welcome to the podcast. We're glad. I appreciate you doing this today. And so welcome aboard.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and, you know, today I have a little intro that our audience will hear about you, but or heard about you. But today, as I was thinking about the podcast and thinking about interviewing you, and we've known each other for a couple of years now, but I don't know that I've ever heard you tell your story, because we have something in common. We have something that we love to do, and that's ride a bicycle, ride a bike, and this love for cycling. And so, but I don't know that I've ever heard you tell your story about when that and how that love of cycling started with you. And I thought maybe you could just share a little bit of that.
Sure. You know, I grew up in South Africa, the tip of the African continent. That's my funny accent that you hear. And growing up in South Africa, I was into sport from a young age. And at first it was running, athletics. And my dad started cycling because of a knee injury. And I followed him into the sport. I was about 12 years old. And my first main competition at a national level was actually on the track. I started racing on the track before the road as an under 13, and I won all the national championships available for under 13 year olds at that time. And I was like, wow, I'm pretty good at the sport, you know, I'm gonna continue with it. Plus I was enjoying it. And then I won the road championships under 13 in South Africa. And throughout my career through high school, I was multiple national champion, both track and road. I was 15 times national champion, and then I was one of the first South Africans selected to race internationally when the sanctions were lifted, because some of you know South Africa had that apartheid going on, and South African athletes weren't allowed to compete internationally. Right. And when that finally lifted, when they released Nelson Mandela from jail, we were actually one of the very first teams to compete in the Junior Tour of Austria as a junior. So that was pretty special. And from there, you know, my dad is French, my mother's German, so I'm not a typical South African. And I've been going to Europe all the time. My dream was to race in the Tour de France. But so right after high school, I left to live in Paris, live with my grandparents. And I moved there. It's funny, I got my driver's license. In South Africa, you get your driver's license at 18 years old. I got my driver's license. We drive on the left side in South Africa. And 4 days later, I was in Paris driving on the right side.
Oh, man.
And if you guys know Paris and how the driving is there, you can imagine it's pretty intense, you know, something like New York.
Sure.
So there I was, 18 years old, racing all over Europe, not only in France, but even in Belgium, Holland, all over. It was an adventure. I was driving all over, and I was very successful. There I raced as a Frenchman because my dad is French. I have French nationality. I was second in the French championships on the track in two events. I raced for the French national team. I was champion of the province or state, which would be comparable to here, of Ile-de-France, in four disciplines. So I was really being groomed to race as a professional. 3 years I've spent in France. And what happened was, when I was about 19, I had an injury, a debilitating injury that stopped my career dead in its tracks. Well, during that time, cycling for me was more the competitive aspect was very exciting for me. It was, you know, all about competition. I was good at the sport, so winning was obviously fun, and that was really what was driving me, and I loved cycling. So I was being groomed to turn professional, and what happened was I had this problem with my leg. My left leg started going numb. I was 19 years old, had an operation in South Africa, which actually made my leg worse. They didn't fix the problem. And so there I was, you know, all my dreams of racing in Europe, being groomed to turn professional, was already riding as a kind of like a tryout on a French pro team. But there I was with my left leg just not working properly anymore. So I basically quit my racing career at 19, went back to South Africa, and, you know, started. I was a little lost there for, you know, a year or so.
Right.
But I had been reading about a doctor in France who had been operating on a lot of professionals, which with a problem that sounded like what I had. So during those 3 years, I ended up studying. I got a 4-year degree. I also worked in advertising, but I still had this burning desire to race the bike. You know, a lot of people thought I was old news. Even my parents thought I would never race again.
Right.
But in the back, in my heart, I knew I had some unfinished business with the sport. So I went back 3 years later, and the French doctor operated on me. There I was all alone in the middle of winter in Lyon, staying in this dingy little hotel to save costs, because staying in the hospital was very expensive. And there I was on my own, writing out my vision of what I wanted to achieve in the next few years in this dingy little hotel with 50 staples all over my body, you know, hunched over in pain.
My goodness.
And there I started my comeback. I was 23 years old, and at first I was nowhere near what I used to be. I was finishing behind guys who I used to, you know, beat quite easily. And I really worked hard for about 7-8 months. And the breakthrough came when I then won the professional road championships of South Africa. And then I was selected to race the Commonwealth Games. And then I turned pro for a South African pro team and ultimately raced 6 years professionally. Got it all out of my system, won another national championships, won some international races, raced all over the world, US, Canada, Europe, Malaysia, Korea, got it out of my system, you know, that burning desire that was really that unfinished business. And then, you know, things started to change when I was late 20s. That competitiveness started to fade in me. And that took me to my next chapter, which ultimately took me to the US. But I always loved cycling. I love not only the competition back when I was younger, not so much now, but I just love the freedom, you know, the fact that you can just get on a bike and ride. I love pushing myself for my own, just for my own self, not for anyone else. And I love the adventure of traveling with the bike. You know, I go to Europe every year, do bike tours. I'm about to leave for Spain in 2 weeks. So that's cycling has been such an amazing part of my life, not only the competitive aspect, but also just the pure experience of it, you know, whether it's on your own, riding a beautiful mountain or, you know, whatever it is, it's just given me so much.
Wow. I didn't know that story about your injury. And, so I appreciate you sharing that. That's, says a lot for who you are. And I'm not surprised, because I've known you without that story, but I see that story manifest itself in the character of the person you are. So after you decided you got your racing out of your system, then you, I guess, moved to the US and started this career of coaching. So take us into that chapter.
So when I was a kid, my dad, he was always my coach, and he coached many of South Africa's riders who went to the Olympics on the track and the road. So he was a very well-known coach, and he was my coach too. And we always had a winning formula, winning all the national championships. So it was in my blood. I started coaching already when I was a junior. I used to coach the younger kids on the track. I even coached a rider named Robert Hunter, who ended up winning a stage in the Tour de France ultimately. But back then he was a kid, 2 years younger than me. And so that's what it was in my blood. And then in my racing professional career, towards the end, I started coaching the team that I was a part of. I helped one of my teammates to finish third in the world championships in the under 23 time trial. I coached him. I also coached a young Daryl Impey, who was, you know, in the Tour de France this year, wore the yellow jersey in 2013.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that was always in my blood. And then when I came to the US, I did start working initially for American Classic, a bike manufacturer, wheel manufacturer. But I started my coaching business on the side. And then within about 2 years, I was at the point where I could take it full time. And I've never looked back. That was in 2007. And I've never looked back. And since then, I've also started a bike touring business called Gourmet Cycling Travel. My business partner is a top chef. So we take people on trips to France, Spain, Italy, mostly around the big races, but also leisure trips in Provence and Tuscany. But the big races being Tour de France, Tour of Spain, Tour of Italy. Not crazy hard cycling, but not easy either. But we combine those two aspects, the gourmet and the cycling. So that's more of a passion business that I do every year as well. And, so that's been my journey. I've also, I dabbled in network marketing, funnily enough, for a few years. And that was a great experience for me. I have found a product that really worked for me for my recovery. And that journey really helped me grow as a person, helped me develop more leadership skills, communication skills, develop my ability to speak in public. So yeah, it's been a rich journey. But now my primary focus is my coaching and the bike touring being more just, fun.
Right. Sure. Well, in the coaching, a lot of people will wonder, those who are listening to this and are not cyclists will wonder exactly what a coach is, and certainly a coach professionally, but you're working with all kinds of athletes. I mean, you're working with me, so obviously I'm not a professional and never will be, and pretty old for the sport, so to speak. But what I love about your coaching, is the discipline that you provide and the ability to meet somebody where they are in their level and create a path to just get better, just to get better. There's tomorrow, you get a little better than you were yesterday and so forth. So maybe talk a little bit about that, it seems like you, I've known a lot of coaches who are excited about only working with elite athletes, and in my knowing you, you seem like you enjoy all athletes, endurance athletes, all types of athletes that you work with, and really just helping them wherever they are in their stage of life and their fitness, and creating a plan to just help them get better.
Honestly, I think I even enjoy more coaching, more the person who's found cycling in the last couple of years of their life, who are super motivated. Maybe they're a little older. Maybe the kids have grown up and they have this motivation of a junior like I did when I was 18. I love coaching people like that because I know there's so much I can teach them and help them. Whereas professional athletes, it's, they've done everything already to improve and you're looking for 1% gains here and there. And I don't really coach many professionals these days. I coach a lot of up and coming juniors, some of the best in the US. I'm involved with, the athlete who just auto qualified for 2 events at the World Champs. So that's pretty exciting. So I love coaching, more recreational cyclists, but still somewhat serious. They may race or have ambitions of, doing well in like a Grand Fondo or Century Ride. And then I really love coaching junior athletes, because that really is the future. So that's really where I'm at with my coaching. I think coaching is all about, the relationship. If you're, if you're a coach, you really got to care about people and put people first. A lot of coaches get so hung up on the numbers and the data. Right. But I think, anyone can buy a training plan. But having a coach, there's a lot of unseen value there that you don't actually see, which is like somebody believing in you, for example. You may not believe in yourself. Somebody's holding a higher vision for what you can achieve. And a lot of times you can step into that vision if somebody believes in you enough, right? Yeah. So that's like one of the big values of a coach. Another value is the accountability. Just having somebody, knowing that somebody's going to look at what you're doing, that in itself provides an extra 5-10% of motivation. There's so many unseen things that provide value on the coaching journey. And I love that piece. I love the mentoring and, just helping people get the most out of themselves. And a lot of it is mental, a lot of it is just how you think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's exactly, why I chose to do this and chose to work with you is because, I mean, our focus is on cycling, but really, you know, you've been more of a life coach in a way for me. It's way more than that. It's the fitness piece of it, but it's also the mental piece of it, the emotional piece of it, and so forth. Just all of those things come together, and that sort of leads me into something I was reading on your website today, and I knew this, but I don't know that I'd read these words. And you know, the name of this podcast is called Discover Blind Spots, or our Blind Spots podcast. And so we talk about things that, you know, we can't see, things that that are just blind to us. And sometimes we need others to pull that out of us, which is what I see that you do. But you had this statement on your website that said, fitness is 100% mental. Your body won't go where your mind does not push it. I mean, I know that. I've heard you preach that, and I get that intellectually. But I know for the average person, they might think who looks at cycling as a sport, you think, well, cycling is 100% physical. I mean, it's all about your physicality and your ability and your endurance and, you know, how strong you are and how long you can last and what peak you can get to. But I love the statement about being 100% mental and then can only go as far as your mind will allow you to go. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and that's actually a statement from the Iceman, Wim Hof, that if you guys know him, he's achieved some amazing things. If you look him up, Wim Hof, he has over 20 Guinness Book World Records, mostly being in the cold. For example, 2 hours in an ice bath where his core temperature didn't go below zero. He's mastered his body and his mind, and I spent a week with him in Poland and done some of his workshops. And so that's a big part of my philosophy, because it is so much mental. You know, we get stuck in certain limiting behaviors, limiting thoughts about ourselves, and that is our reality. And we don't realize that there may be another reality for us if we can break some of those patterns, right? And some of those patterns are just kind of like automatic, you know, from childhood. Maybe it could be parents who, you know, maybe they were always critical of you, or a teacher who said you wouldn't be good enough, or whatever it is. It's in there, you know, it's in that subconscious, and it may create that blind spot. It may limit your belief of yourself. So for me, and I know I see it in myself too, I know I have it, you know, very much so. So for me, it's all about bringing awareness to it and then helping people see another potential, another reality. And if you can open up that window for another reality, then you know, you can create a big shift. And once you create that shift, then it's amazing what you can achieve. It almost seems magical. But people don't realize they have, you know, these blind spots where they're stuck in, they have these walls around them of what they think is possible for them, you know, and they just live within those walls. And it's only once you, like you were saying, you know, if you have somebody there who can actually show you the wall that you don't even see in front of you,
right,
and say, listen, you know, this wall, you're basically stopping before the wall. But what if you think a different thought? Maybe you can move this wall out the way, and there's a whole nother reality available to you, a whole nother potential available to you if you can discover these blind spots.
Yeah.
So that is a big part of my coaching. It's a part I love the most. I know it's an ongoing journey for all of us. I know, you know, I'm nowhere near perfect. But I think the first step is the awareness of the blind spots, right? That is number one, is the awareness.
Absolutely.
Only once you become aware can you actually then, you know, work towards, you know, moving past them.
Yeah, and I forget, maybe a year or so ago, you posted, either on your website or Facebook, I can't remember, kind of a blog post, you wrote a little piece about these two simple words that were really a little bit life-changing for me. It really struck a chord with me, and you know, we've talked about this a little bit. I incorporated in some of the things that I do, but this simple question of two words, which is basically, what if? Talk a little bit about that philosophy of asking that question, what if? Thank you.
So what if this, I don't know how this came to me, honestly. I don't know if I heard it somewhere, or I must have heard it, or I don't know where it came from, but it was a bit of an aha moment for me when I realized, if we use this statement, what if, anytime we have a limiting thought, and we can then first, number one, become aware of that limiting thought. Number two, ask the question, what if, and then rewrite it in an outcome that is much more favorable or positive, and really open up that potential. You know, so like you may be on autopilot, you may start your day, you may think, maybe you're going into your meeting, a job meeting, and you think, you know, you think, wow, I don't have anything to say, I'm clueless on the subject, I'm going to look like a fool. You know, and then wait a minute, those are limiting thoughts, right?
Right.
And then, so that's number one, is that awareness. Okay, these are limiting thoughts. Step two would be, you know, what if, and then rewrite it. So like in a positive way, what if I'm actually just as knowledgeable as everybody here, and what I have to share is of incredible value. And if I don't share it, then the company or, you know, my coworkers are going to miss out on my wisdom, you know? And so that's just an example that came off the top of my head, but that's really how you would use it. You would just, the awareness is key, number one. The two is rewriting the statement with a lot of attention and deep thinking, and rewriting it in a way that's going to open up the possibilities for you. Because really, what the story we tell ourselves is our reality. You know, so if we tell ourselves a better story, we create a better reality for ourselves, and the whole world, you know, it kind of meets us there. You know, where whatever we're putting out, it kind of meets us there, and then we transform our world just based on changing our vibration, changing our thoughts to better, more empowering thoughts. And the what if statement is a great way to, you know, to really shine a light on those limitations and rewrite them in a better way.
Yeah. And where it really resonated with me and a lot of things, but I'll go back to a cycling analogy. That, you know, a lot of times when we get to that negative spot, or we get to that wall, that hurdle, and we think, you know, and even if we're, you know, in a fitness thing, you know, you think, well, I've reached my max, I can't go anymore. And I remember I've climbed Mount Mitchell, you know, with a bicycle. I've done that climb up Mount Mitchell, and it's about a little over 4 miles from the entrance of the park to the top. And obviously it's a brutal climb. And it's usually at the end of a long ride, the assault on Mount Mitchell, you know, 103 miles or so. And so that's your last 4 miles of the ride. So it's pretty brutal. But when you do that climb at the beginning, it's just straight up. I mean, there's no switchbacks. It's just straight up, which is the worst kind of climb to do, because it feels like you're never going to get to the end of it. And so there's a point always where you feel like, okay, I can't do anymore. I'm gonna have to stop. I'm not going to be able to do it. And your what if statement, you know, sometimes you say, well, what if you can make it to the top? And that's even maybe not even the right question. It was, well, what if you could go another 60 seconds? What if you could go another minute and a half? And in regards to that, the Mount Mitchell climb, when you get to about, I think it's about mile two or so, somewhere in that neighborhood, two or two and a half, and you feel like, okay, this is it. If you ask that what if question, what if you went just another minute or so? What you don't realize is a little bit of a false flat, you know, for about a mile that you never saw. Yeah. Whereas if you never ask that question, you know, if you never push through. Another illustration that I thought of today, when I had my textile business and was in the marketplace, and when we were young and we were experiencing some success and some growth, I had a warehouse manager who was an extremely hard worker. And I mean, he wasn't lazy at all. I mean, he worked like a dog. And I remember the day that we pushed and pushed and pushed. We had a deadline. It was the end of the month. We had to get stuff out. And so a big day back in the day, you know, in early days, was maybe we shipped, 200 boxes. And we get to the end of the day, and I looked at him, and he said, yep, that's all we can do. He said, there's no way we could ever do any more than that. I mean, that about killed us to get that out. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? I wonder if we could do like 225. He said, there's no way, can't do it. And then about a month later, we got to the end of the month, and I said, remember, I think we can do 225. And he said, no, we can't do it. Well, we hit 225, and he looked at me, and he said, wow, never thought we could do that. And the interesting thing, it wasn't but maybe another month or two, and he was shipping 300 boxes and 350 wow. boxes.
Yeah.
So the concept for me was, which was interesting, is that, you know, sometimes when you think, well, can you give another 2%, and you think, well, what's that going to do? I mean, that's not going to help. But what we don't understand, when we break through and give that extra, you know, percentage or so, sometimes we reap the benefit of, you know, a 20% growth or a 30% growth or 50% growth. And I just think that I think the what if statement is just so, so powerful.
It's so true. And I think a lot of times we overwhelm ourselves, you know, with what's ahead of us. We think, you know, we pile it all on, you know, like with Mount Mitchell, you're thinking like the whole climb ahead of you, or but so much in life is about mind games and breaking it down to what can I do in this moment,
yes.
the process, right? Like what can I do right now?
Yes.
And like what if you can is a great statement to use just to also break it down. Like, you know, the project ahead of you may seem overwhelming, but if you just say, you know, what if I just do the first step, you know, what if I just think my finish line is 500 meters from here and then I decide. And what's interesting is oftentimes in cycling, and I think it's the same in life, the point where you feel like you want to quit and it's like, you know, that's now you're bumped up against that wall, right? That's that old you
yes.
that he doesn't like to push through. That's where the old you would quit, right? That's where you bumped up against that wall, whether it's on a bike or in life, when you're out of your comfort zone, whatever it is. But what's interesting is if you can break through there, and the mind never kind of tells you this, but what's interesting is it actually gets easier, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't get harder. You know, you're imagining it's going to get harder and harder and harder. But the funny thing is, if you break through that old pattern, that wall, that blind spot, then all of a sudden you're in another state and you're in a new place that you haven't been before. And actually you're more efficient. Things are easier all of a sudden. You have a second wind. And it's like, wow, you know, that was the hardest moment right there.
Yeah.
And if I had quit, I would have never known that I could have gone past there and it would actually get easier, not harder.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have in life. I mean, most of the time we're our own worst enemies, in that we listen to, you know, these demons in our head or whatever. You know, we convince ourselves that we can't do this, that, and the other. And I love your statement, you know, with the what if question, but I love your statement about what it does is it allows you or it forces you to start changing the narrative and quit listening to, you know, those narratives that are going to hold you back, and listen to a different narrative, change that story so that you can break through that whatever that wall, whatever that blind spot is. Talk about in a little bit of time we got left here, but talk about what are some of the biggest hurdles, or, you know, I mean I obviously call them blind spots or whatever, but call them whatever you want, but what are some of the biggest hurdles that you think, and maybe this is one, you know, the mental piece that we just talked about, but any those are other hurdles that you think, the biggest hurdles that athletes that you work with face, that might be, that, as I said, that I might call it a blind spot.
I think a lot of it is probably around, you know, self-belief, confidence. For a lot of people, that feeling of, am I worthy? You know, am I worthy? If you're a competitor, you know, am I worthy of being on the top step of the podium? This is a common theme in many people. Many people, they don't feel like they deserve it, or they have that limitation, that blind spot, that maybe it's just a conditioning. It's a voice in their head. Maybe it's from even a family member. That's a common one. Just bad habits as well, of discipline, of not prioritizing time very well, and of, you know, thinking you're always busy, but a lot of times you're just busy being busy. You're not actually being efficient at all. So a lot of people think they're so busy, but they're not getting that much done. And then the training is suffering because they think they have no time. So I think discipline, learning good habits of time management is another big one. The people who are the most successful that I coach are incredibly disciplined, and they get it done no matter what. And they know what time they're going to get it done, the training session, and they get it done. The people who are not as successful, you know, it's more like they're kind of winging it. They don't know what time they're going to ride. They're not organized. They do half the training session. Something comes up and, you know, they're getting distracted constantly. Doesn't help these days with social media and so on. So I think a lot of the blind spots are also about discipline. Mental discipline is a big one. I have a friend of mine who's a very successful marketer online. He teaches people how to record music, and he makes a lot of money, and he only works 2 days a week, and those days he finishes at about 3 p.m. and to see what he achieves is mind-blowing to me. I still scratch my head because he's constantly pumping out content, 2 videos a week. He has over 400,000 followers on YouTube. He has an email list of over 200,000. And he hardly works. He does 20 hours a week, and he has time. And I have time too, but I don't have that kind of organization yet. I'm not there yet. So I'm still learning and trying to become better. But I think those are two that really come to mind, is the discipline, the time management piece, and then also the lack of self-worth or self-belief in what you can achieve as a person.
Yeah. I've said recently, in fact, I just posted a podcast a video on the website today, but I heard recently, I've been in this a little bit of this theory and doing some reading and stuff, and that 80% of our day is filled with 10-foot level stuff. In other words, the stuff you just have to get done. 80% of our time is filled with those kind of things. And you can't really change that necessarily, because there's just so much stuff in life. You have kids, you have a job, you have a deadline, you have to get those things done. So, they're there. So we don't always have the luxury of saying, well, I'll just give that to somebody else. Sometimes it's just yourself. But the remaining 20% is really what separates people who are successful and maybe who are not successful, in that the remaining 20% is where they focus on, which I call WIGs, wildly important goals. In other words, things that just two or three things where you say, in that 20% of my time, I'm going to focus on the things that will really make a difference. Whereas most of our to-do lists are, all they're really doing is allowing us to tread water. We're not moving forward. We're just checking things off our list just to make sure we don't drown. But that remaining 20% where you say, these are the most important things that you do in order to accomplish what you need to accomplish. And I've loved that even in your coaching, because, you would think, okay, well, if I'm going to get better, I got to train longer, and I've got to spend more time doing, and your philosophy is, I mean, certainly you have times where you do that, but it's really more about the quality of what you're doing in the time frame you have, and the focus of what you're doing in the time frame you have. I heard one of the, I can't think of her name right now, but one of the original sort of founders of Twitter, and was known as probably one of the most productive people around. I mean, just could churn out work. And I heard her say, the most that in a week, her most productive, the amount of time that she can stay totally focused to get things done in a week is only about 20 hours, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But what she does is she says, in that 20 hours, I'm not going to be distracted, and I'm going to get accomplished a whole lot of important things, WIGs, wildly important goals. Whereas I look at myself included sometimes, I get to the end of the week and maybe I've worked 100 hours, but I haven't accomplished anything. So, yeah. You're right. It's that focus and that drive and really having someone like yourself direct you to kind of make sure that you're heading in that right direction.
Yeah. And maybe somebody like you who can help business people. Because I think a lot of challenges is also, you know, like, how do you prioritize, right? That's another talent. It's like you have these two things coming at you. One is an email and one is your goal to create something. And it's that discernment to say, you know, wait a minute, like, what's growing my business is this. It's not this email that needs to be answered. You know, it's like that. Absolutely. That is a talent and an ability in itself to have that kind of discernment, because otherwise we just give everything an equal weight. You know, we just are busy, addicted to being busy.
Yeah, and that's that piece where that 80% of the 10-foot level stuff, if we don't watch it, it becomes 100%, and it just monopolizes. Like you said, we just become busy. And I, you know, me personally, you know, I've confessed, I love checking off little things on my list. I mean, I love doing that. I love getting to the end of the day and say, well, I got 20 things done, but did you really move the ball forward? No, not really. You know, I just got a lot of, did a lot of little things, and probably half of them, you know, were not that significant. So for sure. Well, good. Thank you. If somebody wanted to know more about you, you know, whether a cyclist or not a cyclist, I mean, I love, like I said, some of your coaching, your mentoring, your philosophies and stuff like that. How would they find you?
You can find me, my coaching website is simonsayscycling.com, simonsayscycling.com, like the game. And also on Facebook, Simon Says Cycling, and Instagram, you should find me there. Also, my personal is Simon Kessler. That should also show up. But yeah, it's just simonsayscycling.com. That's my coaching. And then, you know, also Gourmet Cycling Travel, those who are interested in touring. We have gourmetcyclingtravel.com, and also on Facebook, Gourmet Cycling Travel, and Instagram. So there you can reach me any way, those three ways, whether it's personal, through the coaching, or the bike tours.
Yeah. I'll must cycle back. Maybe we'll end with this, but I'll cycle back because your story of you laying in the, I guess, the hotel or wherever you were when you were, you know, when you had your injury and you were recovering, and, you know, we were talked about what if, and you said, I don't know where I heard that, or, you know, maybe I read it or and so forth. I wonder if that wasn't inspired by that time, you know, because it sounds like when you were laying there recovering and people thought you were done, you were rewriting the narrative, for sure. And, wow. I mean, what an inspiring story to get at, you know, at that young age to be able to do that and then sort of change that perspective and accomplish, so much.
Yeah. One thing I've had magical results with is writing out what I want to achieve, and also writing it in a way that it's already happened, like it's the future and I'm looking back, and then embodying that feeling of that achievement. And throughout my career, I've had some really magical things happen by doing that. And that was one moment where I wrote some of those things down, what I wanted to achieve. And I remember looking back on it, I'd forgotten about the piece of paper, and then I found it, you know, a year or so later, and I was like, wow, you know, I did everything I wrote down there, even though I didn't believe it was possible 6 months after that point when I was really struggling.
Right.
But then ultimately it did all happen, you know, just by persevering and believing. So yeah, it's very powerful to do that for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. You, over these couple of years, I feel like you've become a great friend and a mentor and a coach and a whole lot of things. And I appreciate that. And I've learned from you. I've been challenged by you, not only just in, you know, when I'm on a bicycle, but in life. And so I appreciate that. And so just thanks for taking time with us today and being transparent and telling a little bit of your story.
Hey, my pleasure, Tim, and thank you for all that you're doing. I know you're creating a lot of value out there with just what you're about and who you are as a person. So, you know, thank you for just being who you are.
Wow, what a great story. So many takeaways. Perhaps there's something in your life where you need to just simply rewrite the story. Hey, if you're a leader and I can help you uncover your blind spots, I'd love to talk to you about that. I love to work with organizations on their strategy and clarifying their messaging and just really overall personal development of your teams. If you want to get in touch with me, you can do that by going to discoverblindspots.com, discoverblindspots.com, or you simply can just send me an email to tim@discoverblindspots.com. See you next time.